Good morning, everyone. It is Friday, December 29th, 2017, and week 17 of the regular season is upon us. The Green Bay Packers will travel over to Detroit for the regular season finale against the Lions at Ford Field. It is a game that doesn't mean much of anything for either team, with the exception of maybe sliding up or down here or there, a spot or two or three in the draft. In the draft selection order, but in terms of playoffs, the Packers are out, obviously, the Lions are out, and so it's one of those games where everyone talks about how do you approach it, what do you do, how do you go into it, and so that's sort of been the topic of conversation yet again in Green Bay for what will be the second of two meaningless games. Thank you guys very much for tuning in to another episode of the Packers Podcast. I'm here with Tom Silverstein, and we hope you guys had a nice and restful holiday weekend. Tom, what did you think of the way that the Packers went into last week's game against the Vikings, and what, if anything, will change this week as they get ready to play the Lions?
Well, I thought they looked like a team that had nothing to play for. Basically, you know, they showed up. I thought the defense played pretty decent. The Vikings, to me, looked like a team that also didn't want to be there, didn't want to be playing in the cold, relied on its defense to win the game, and got out with what I'm sure Mike Zimmer thought was a great evening, because they didn't get anyone hurt. They didn't. They won the game, and it didn't take a whole ton of effort. So I think, you know, this week maybe the Packers will be a little bit more in tune with just playing the game, and their disappointment is a little bit over. But I really think that they've got so many guys hurt that this is sort of a glorified preseason game. And the only way it can be interesting would be if it turned it into one of these, into that total track meet type game they had in 2011 when Rodgers didn't start. The Packers had the playoffs clinched. They were 15-1. And Matt Flynn threw for 6 touchdowns, and Stafford threw for 1,000 yards, and it was a fun game to watch. But I'm not real hopeful that's what's going to happen on Sunday.
Yeah, I don't know if Hundley can throw 6 touchdowns in a game, let alone, you know, half a season. So
maybe on the road, though, you know,
that's
he's a
true.
Road warrior.
He is a road quarterback, there's no doubt about it. Has not thrown a touchdown at Lambeau Field this season, which means you and I have the same number of touchdown passes as a guy who started 5
that's
games
right.
at Lambeau Field. Pretty wild to think about. You know, I wasn't at the game over the weekend, but the one thing that sort of struck me is that I started to see some body language go south for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you looked at the offensive side of the ball, and you know, I remember Randall Cobb in particular was pretty upset on a couple of plays, and the receivers in general, I think, were starting to get frustrated. Even just when they showed, you know, clips of guys on the sideline or quick, you know, photos of guys on the sideline, you could tell that it had sunk in that the playoffs were not happening. Did you get the sense in the locker room that anyone had checked out or anything like that?
I don't think it was so much that guys had checked out. But I sensed a lot of frustration. And while they wouldn't say it, I'm pretty sure it had to do with Hundley's performance and the fact that it's all you keep hearing from the coaches is, oh, he's a way better quarterback than he was when he stepped on the field against Minnesota. Well, he wasn't on Saturday. He looked like the same guy to me. And I think he looked like the same guy to the players. And I think it was extremely frustrating for the receivers to, you know, run their routes, and Hundley's back doing the same thing, which is not stepping forward in the pocket, not seeing guys down the field when he scrambles, just the same old stuff we've talked about for weeks. And I'm sure that was really discouraging to a lot of guys. I'm sure it was discouraging to an offensive line that played tremendous against a really good Vikings defense. I mean, if that had been Aaron Rodgers playing, Packers would have won that game because of how well they were playing defense and how well they blocked. So, you know, here we go, another game. I really think for the credibility of his team, McCarthy needs to pull the plug if Hundley has another first half like he did Sunday. If he starts last Saturday, if he starts turning the ball over, he got to go with Callahan. But they're stubborn, and they really think they have something in Hundley, and presumably they're smarter than us, so we'll see.
The thing that I don't get about the Hundley situation is, and I can't remember if I mentioned this on the podcast or not, but I know you and I have at least talked about it together in some capacity, but you know, whenever you ask guys in the locker room what they respect about Hundley or you know, things of that nature, they always talk about his demeanor, his preparation, the way he approaches it, you know, the way he carries himself, all those types of things. And that's fine. Those are all important things. You know, all the best players have good work habits for the most part and things like that. But I don't know what, in terms of on-field performance or on-field results, would give anyone on the offense confidence that Hundley can play. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but the guy can be the most studious, most well-mannered, most prepared guy in the world, but based on the way he's played, I don't know how you can go to Corey Linsley or go to Randall Cobb and say, do you really think this guy can beat the Vikings? And how can they possibly say yes and mean it? It just, that's to me is where the difference is that he's doing all the right things off the field, but he just is not capable of doing them on it.
Yeah, you know, there's flashes of it. If he could have packaged the Pittsburgh game together, you know, with just kept it going throughout the rest of the season, that would have been fine. Where he was controlled, where he threw a lot of quick passes, he didn't get overwhelmed, dumped the ball off to his receivers, and instead you get this just discombobulation. Now, I will use the caveat that they were a mess because guys started dropping out. You know, Richard Rodgers is gone, and then all of a sudden their two tight end package they had practiced all week was gone.
Spriggs went down on the first snap.
Spriggs went down, although that wasn't too huge. But, you know, Richard Rodgers, Nelson eventually bowed out. Adams wasn't there. Aaron Jones got hurt. It was just kind of a disaster. They're playing with Michael Clark and Trevor Davis and Jeff Janis. And, you know, some of that showed. But to me, Hundley still did not look comfortable. And he's got a long way to go, I think.
You mentioned Michael Clark and Trevor Davis and Janis. Those were the guys that got a little bit more playing time. And Michael Clark has been a popular figure in the locker room this week because he was this project that they sort of took on in training camp when he started making all these leaping catches. And eventually they put him on the practice squad, and eventually they called him up to the active roster. And then he played because of the way the playoff situation worked itself out. What do you think of Clark right now, and what do you think he might be at some point for this team?
Well, I'm not as high as everybody else is. I'm a little skeptical because I've seen guys come in, they got this great physical talent, and, you know, in the early going, they look good. And then you realize that they don't have innate football ability, and that pretty soon opponents figure them out, and then they don't get good enough, you know, in a football standpoint. They're athletically, they're great, but it's sort of like guys who can really run fast but can't play corner. You know, like they can really run with a guy, Josh Hawkins, you know. Here's a guy who can run as fast as any receiver, but doesn't matter, not unless he's playing great technique. And while you see him do it sometimes, you don't see him do it all the time. And so I think Clark's kind of the same way. He does have a great physical talent, and they need to keep exploring it. But As I said, I'm skeptical. You know, when some cornerback gets in there and just jams him at the line and doesn't let him release, it's going to be a frustrating day for him. And it could be against Detroit. They throw Darius Slay on him.
Yeah, the wide receiver position in general could look totally different when they go and play Detroit, because Nelson is unlikely to play.
He's not going to play.
Exactly. Adams is not going to play. And so, I mean, they could play Cobb a lot, I guess. But, I mean, you could be in a situation where you're looking at Clark, Trevor Davis, and Janis as your three guys for most of the game, with Allison, too.
If he plays, he's been sick all week.
That's
so
true.
He may not even play either.
So, you know, those are the guys that fans often clamor for on social media, and I'm sure in the blog as well you get questions about why doesn't Janis play, you know, why can't they throw Trevor Davis out there and send him deep. You know, they put those guys out there, and honestly, I understand why they don't play them. You know, it doesn't look natural when they're out there.
I'm going to tell you a story about Jeff Janis, and this is the story of Jeff Janis's career. So on the very first day that Rodgers practices, I think this was probably the week he came back before the Carolina game. And I'm out there in practice, and they're just running their routes on air, you know, which means there's no defender. And Rodgers is and all you have like four receivers in this formation, and they just run down the field, each running different routes, combinations. And then you have four quarterbacks back there, four guys throwing them balls. And Rodgers has Janis, and he throws this post route, and Janis is running a corner route. And it's just like, well, right back to, you know, that's pretty normal, you know. So it kind of shows you that these guys, unless it takes a lot more than speed and athletic ability to be a wide receiver. You know, Trevor Davis can run as fast as he wants, but if the corner's playing 20 yards off him, he's not going to get deep. If that's the only route he can run, there's no cornerback in the world who can't just line up 20 yards deep and defend him. He's got to be able to go across the middle. He's got to be able to read defenses. People think he can just throw a deep ball to a guy. Well, it doesn't really work like that. So what was the question?
Is that why they don't play those two guys?
Yeah, I guess that's it. No, the rant is over.
Well, you know, the common element, I think, with guys like Janis and Josh Hawkins is that when you see those guys and you see their athletic talents and then you see their shortcomings on the field, it tells you why they were undrafted or drafted mm-hmm. so late. Josh Hawkins, in terms of pure athleticism, leaping ability, speed, change of direction, could be in the top five most athletic guys on the team, but the awareness just isn't there on the field and the ability to stay disciplined just isn't there. Mm-hmm. And with Janis, you see all those things too. And so, to me, that's what makes it so much more impressive what Minnesota has found in Adam Thielen, because this is a guy that played nowhere, Mankato State or whatever it was.
Mankato, yeah.
Yeah, Mankato State. And this is a guy that now has a 1,000-yard receiving season, is a Pro Bowl receiver, and that is the ultimate diamond in the rough that does not come around very often. And so I understand why people want, you know, Janis and Hawkins and Pipkins and all these guys to be out there, but there's a reason why they are where they are, mm-hmm. and the overwhelming likelihood is that they're not Adam Thielen. It's mm-hmm. that there's somebody else that's not going to get there.
There's only, you know, one Adam Thielen in your organization every 10 years. You know, there's only one Sam Shields in your organization every 10 years. You hit on those guys, and then you think, oh, boy, well, they're going to hit on a lot more of those guys. Well, that's not the odds. The odds are that most undrafted guys are not going to make it, or they're not going to be more than role players. It's just the way it is. You have to have athleticism, and then you have to have football awareness. And usually there's something missing from those guys. And once in a while, the guys make it, and at certain positions. But you got to have a ton of skill to be a wide receiver, and you got to have a ton of skill and knowledge to be a cornerback.
So what do you do with Janis? He's a free agent this year. What do the Packers do with him?
I try to re-sign him. I mean, to me, I was thinking about it on Thursday talking to Ron Zook. You know, there's teams all over the place that have specialists, one guy who's a specialist. And Janis is that guy. And he has an incredible impact on their punt game. How much do you pay him, and who's willing to pay him more? You know, maybe some team, there has to be a limit of what you're going to devote to him. But I try to re-sign him, no question. But, you know, understand that he's a special teams player.
He's not a wide receiver.
He's not a wide receiver.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I would try and re-sign him as well. But he has to realize, and the Packers have to realize, that they're not getting any offensive value out of what they're signing.
Packers know that.
Well, yeah.
Packers know
maybe
that.
Janis doesn't
know that. Yes.
Yeah. So that's one area to keep an eye on. Let's stick with the young guys and go to the other side of the ball. What did you think of Lindsey Pipkins, who I already mentioned at corner, and then Reggie Gilbert, who were the two guys that hadn't received much playing time at all, or none in Gilbert's case, and actually did get to see the field a decent amount against Minnesota?
Well, I've kind of liked Lindsey Pipkins since training camp. I thought he was really a competitor. I don't know that he was always doing the right thing, but he definitely has a NFL body. He's a big, strong guy. He can run. He competes hard. I like him. I just don't know if he can hold up over, you know, the course of a season. He's played a little bit against Minnesota in the first game, and he played against a little bit against Minnesota in the second game. And both times, you know, he did his job pretty well. Reggie Gilbert is going to be interesting. So he comes off, you know, so he comes off the practice squad. There's no book on him, really. You could go back in training camp and take a look at him, but the Vikings don't know a whole lot about him. Plays pretty well, you know. I mean, he had some pressure, hit the quarterback, you know. Now let's see what happens after they've had some time to study him. And now all of a sudden he's going against, you know, tackles who know what they're doing and know what his weaknesses are. And let's see what goes on from that point. I always think that, you know, a guy's debut isn't always indicative of what he's going to do later.
Pipkins, you know, from my perspective, I really am impressed by the way he tackles. One thing that he did in both games is he'll come up and hit somebody. I remember he stopped the running play short of the goal line.
Yeah,
Latavius Murray against Minnesota in this one. And then I think in the first Minnesota game, I can't remember if it was a screen pass or something, but he cut down somebody in the flat.
Yeah.
And so that
– chirped about it for
– right.
Or, and then after he got blindsided too. Yeah. Yeah, he's
– So you look –
not a quiet guy.
So you look at the way that he tackles, and then you sort of compare it to the way that, you know, guys over the last couple of years, whether it's been Rollins or Randall, guys that have shied away at times, and it's just a stark contrast there. So that is one area that I think he does really well in. And Gilbert, you know, I really agree with you. This to me is going to be key. If he can find success against a team that has already seen him and knows what he's doing, that to me is the big indication of where he's at. But I will say this, in talking to some guys this week about him, and I wrote a story on him in today's paper, in Friday's paper, guys in the locker room think he's really good. Mm-hmm. I asked Bakhtiari about him, and he said that him and Bulaga have been asking each other for weeks why he has not been getting an opportunity sooner, because he's been giving them legitimate problems at times as a member of the scout team. And then Clay Matthews said that of all the guys that he's seen play the edge rusher position in his time here, no one has developed more than Gilbert has in the last 2 years. And don't forget, this is a guy that was essentially a defensive end with his hand in the dirt in college. He told me he played almost exclusively four technique on the inside, and now he's being asked to play off the ball in a two-point stance. And he said that it took him legitimately a full year to feel like he was an outside linebacker. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until his second round of OTAs that he felt comfortable enough to say, okay, I don't have to think anymore when I'm out here. And so now he's essentially only 7-8 months removed from the time that he first felt really comfortable. So that gives you an idea of it does take these guys time. And so you can't give up on them right away. You're also not always going to get 5 years like Nick Perry did. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to see. But those are two guys that I think are sort of ones that could be roster candidates next year.
Could be, yeah. You know, but if I'm the Packers, those are the two biggest needs they have going in, maybe with tight end as a close third, is outside pass rusher and cornerback. And so you need to upgrade at that position, and it'll be great if those guys come through for you. But take it for what it is. There are two practice squad guys who are getting their chance late in the year, and you'd like to do better than them. But, you know, let's see what they got.
So how about the person who will be coordinating that defense this week? It's Dom Capers now. Mm-hmm. Could it be the last time he's in charge? That's to be determined, obviously. But if Mike McCarthy is going to make a move, it'll probably be very swiftly after the game, if not the day after the game. What is
maybe,
sort of...
Maybe.
Maybe.
I think he's got to look... You know, part of it is... And I do think he will make a change. But part of it is seeing who's available. You know, you don't want to... You don't want to show your hand too early and then all of a sudden regret it. But I do think the decision has been made. I would be really shocked if Capers comes back. I would predict that there will be some kind of agreement where he'll retire, and they won't fire him. I don't know. He's got a lot of pride. I don't know if he wants to coach again. I think he does. But anyway, regardless, it could happen on Monday. Why screw around with it? But knowing McCarthy, he's going to make sure that he's got a guy in line to replace him. Now, that can sometimes be easier said than done. Depends what happens on Monday. You know, Black Monday, they call it. But either way, I think that Dom has probably coordinated his last game. Will have coordinated his last game on Sunday for the Packers.
Now, I don't know what that meeting will be like if McCarthy, you know, decides to say to Dom, you know, hey, we're going in a different direction. But I think they should make the change as well. But if I'm Dom, I just wonder if there is an argument to be made that, you know, just to put on the table and say, look, you know, we haven't had any quality cornerbacks in 2 years, and the safeties stink, and the top pass rushers that you've given me can't stay healthy. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until this season that we finally had somebody on the D-line that could pair with Mike Daniels. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not saying those are valid excuses. I do think a change should be made. But I don't think you can totally say that all of the issues that have gone on are Dom Capers related. I think some of them are talent. I think some of them are Capers. And I think some of them are, you know, disconnect between coaching and on-field performance.
Yeah. I've never gone off on Dom Capers because of the reasons you've just stated. I think his defenses are solid. I think when they've gotten to the playoffs, for the most part, he's come up with really good plans. You know, they got blown out in Atlanta, but they were down to nobody in that game. Seattle, they played really well until they got worn down in the fourth quarter. I think what's different for me is that there just seems to be no coordination amongst positions. The staff looks to me like they're beaten down a little bit, like they don't have an idea of how to get anything done with these guys. And you know, if you look at it, if things go right in the off season, they do have a really nice core of players coming back. Now, you know, if they can get Kevin King, Josh Jones, and Montrevious Adams to do what Kenny Clark, Fackrell, and Vince Beagle is in that group too, to do what Kenny Clark, Fackrell, and Blake Martinez did last year, then all of a sudden they got a nice collection of players with Clay Matthews coming back, Perry will be back, Daniels will be back. All of a sudden, then you add, you know, you're drafting in the middle of the round, you add another corner, and God forbid you sign a free agent. All of a sudden, you got a pretty decent defense, but you just need new blood in there. You need a new scheme. You need someone, a new voice in there. I think it's just been going on too long with the same voice.
One thing that I've wondered about, and I haven't really been here long enough to have an educated opinion on it, I just wondered if the players here in Green Bay, you know, the fact that they have a lot of young guys and some veterans, if it's a collection that talent-wise is good enough to be an okay defense, and that Capers scheme, independent of that, is good enough to be an okay defense, and that just the two sides being wed together, Capers defense and a lot of young players, that is the clash, mm-hmm. maybe that's part of it. In other words, if you took Capers and put him in Carolina, because the coaches all talked about how veteran that defense was and how long those guys have been together, would his scheme be significantly more effective? I know it's 4-3 to 3-4, but I'm just saying, with a much more veteran defense, does Dom's scheme immediately become more effective? I don't know. That's one thing that people have wondered. Is it too complex for the youth that the Packers have?
Yeah, it might be. It's definitely made for a veteran secondary, but he's dumbed it down a lot. I think, so here's really what the the very thin line between a good defense and a bad defense is. Let's look at Clay Matthews. Clay Matthews is still a good pass rusher. He's got 7.5 sacks and a number of quarterback hits and a good number of pressures. He's still a good player. If their cornerbacks can hold coverage for a half second longer, he's got 12 sacks. You know, if Clay Matthews could be a half second faster to the quarterback, then they've got more interceptions. It's got to work on both ends. And what's happening is it's not. There's just not this coordination between the way the two sides are playing. And somehow they got to figure out how to fix that. And that's where I see the biggest problem.
So then the next question is, if they do decide to bring in somebody new for the defensive coordinator job, what does that do to the rest of the staff? I think you and I are in agreement that there's not anyone on the staff that McCarthy would promote to defensive coordinator.
No, I don't think so.
And so then, you know, it's a matter of who, if anybody, would stick around. And you've been through coordinator changes before, so why don't you sort of explain what may happen in terms of guys either being flat-out fired or being asked to interview, or how this could play out for certain guys?
I would think that it would play out like this. McCarthy has probably some ideas of which defensive assistants he doesn't want anymore, and those guys will get fired. The rest, you know, along with Capers, the rest are on 2-year contracts, and they'll be sort of on hold. They'll be told, you know, a decision will be made on you. You know, you'll have a chance to interview with the new defensive coordinator. I'll put in a good word for you, but ultimately he's got to be comfortable with his staff. That's kind of what happened with Capers. You know, Capers was able to bring in Kevin Green was part of his staff. Darren Perry was part of his staff. McCarthy knew Turgovic, so he helped make him part of the staff. Joe Witt was already part of the staff. He stayed on. Winston Moss was part of the staff. He stayed on. And so they just kind of had a hybrid a little bit. So it really depends on the new guy coming in and what number of assistants he can bring with him, who he wants to hire, and that kind of stuff. It'd be a collaboration between him and McCarthy.
So should we go through some of the assistant coaches and see what we think in terms of guys that'll stay or not stay? Do you have any? Have you thought about that at all?
You know, I think it really depends on scheme
and on
just what McCarthy's staff. But we don't know enough about what goes on behind the scenes and who's a good coach and who isn't. I honestly can't tell you. You know, I can tell you where guys have improved. You know, I think Turgovic's group is always competitive, always improving. I think, you know, corner has been a question mark. I don't know if that's Joe Witt's fault. I don't know. It's just one of those things where I don't think I'm qualified to judge whether a guy is has had a good year coaching or is capable or should be kept. But, you know, McCarthy has to make that decision.
No, I agree with you. The only thing that really we can point to is where guys have improved or regressed or whatever the case may be. And then the other thing is, you know, what do they do with whatever assets they're given? You know, if they're given 2 straight first-round picks, if they're given a veteran free agent, you know, what do they do with those guys and what do they turn it into? No, but I agree. It's really hard to say, you know, in the classroom setting, what are these guys like? Because we really don't know. And so, you know, I guess that's where we stand on the defensive side of the ball. Do you foresee any potential changes on offense, or does everybody sort of get a free pass because of Rodgers?
Well, we already know that Luke Getsy is going to leave for Mississippi State, so they're going to need a wide receivers coach. Alex Van Pelt could get some interest as an offensive coordinator. If I'm a team, I would think about James Campen as an offensive coordinator as well. You know, you'd probably want him to go to an offensive team where a guy is where the
head coach is an offensive guy.
Yeah. But this guy has done a tremendous job with their offensive line. And I remember 6, 7 years ago when he was like, fans thought he was just garbage, you know, that he was the worst coach ever and that, get rid of him. But, you know, when you give him some players, he's done a tremendous job, and he's done a tremendous job this year with Justin McCray and Lucas Patrick and Spriggs and
just Kyle Murphy before that.
Kyle Murphy. I mean, everybody he's worked with has gotten better. Now, maybe that's, you know, I do think offensive line is one of Thompson's better positions. I mean, he's missed on some, but I think he's really hit on, really done well on offensive linemen. Anyway, that's a possibility. Someone could woo him. You know, beyond that, I can't see anybody getting fired. You know, Ben Sermon's,
I think he's had a very good year.
You can't argue with the production those rookies have had.
Yep.
Tight ends, I don't know how you can even grade Angelico after that craziness with Martellus Bennett. Who am I forgetting? Edgar, you know, he's been here a long time, and the offense has been productive every year. I don't think he's a problem at all.
And that's just about it, unless you think Van Pelt would get fired.
Yeah, no, and I don't think Van Pelt. So I think the offense, I don't think the offense is that big of a problem. I think maybe some of their judgments on Hundley are a problem, but I don't have any qualms with what they've done offensively this year.
The other one that you and I get asked about repeatedly is what happens with Ted Thompson. You know, that's the question everybody wants to know. Will Mark Murphy ever make a move and say, hey, we're going to go somewhere else? Or, Ted, you know, we appreciate what you've done, but, you know, it's time. I personally, I'm of the opinion that Ted will be back next season and finish out the last year on his contract.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're going to make a move, and if they did make a move, I think it would be Ted choosing to step aside more so than anyone asking him to leave. That's just my opinion. I don't know where you stand on that, but I would be a little bit – I'd be surprised if Ted Thompson's not the GM at the start of next season.
Yeah, me too. I think if I'm Murphy, and I don't know that Murphy has got the guts to do this, but I go to Ted and say, you know, you have 1 year left on your contract. What's your future? What do you want? Okay, if he says, I'm going to retire after this year, then I want a succession plan. And I want him to make it work. I want him to do what Ron Wolf didn't really do for Mike Sherman, which was, you know, he gave him some time together, but I would really want them to decide now who it's going to be. If Ted is non-committal, then I think Murphy has to make an executive decision and say, okay, I stand the chance of losing Gutekunst and Wolf. How do I weigh that versus what, you know, keeping Ted for one more year? I don't know. I think you have to make a decision here. And I think they need to make a succession plan, you know, and start moving whoever the new person's in into a decision-making position. And maybe it's after this draft, or maybe it's, you know, they work together on it. But it's got to start pretty soon if you're going to move away from Ted.
So how would the succession plan work if Murphy and Ted sit down and talk about things and they decide that the best option is somebody that's not here? Because then how do you make that plan? That's the one thing, I don't want to say monkey wrench, but if they decided not to go with Wolf or Gutekunst or Russ Ball or Alonzo Highsmith and they said, you know, we think that there's somebody out there that could be better, how would...
I don't think they would.
Okay.
I think they've stayed in-house. They have a system they really like. They have talented guys. As much as you want to criticize their drafts, I think their last two drafts have been pretty good. And I think over the years their drafts have been good. I just don't think you need to shake the whole thing up. I think you have enough talent there to continue on. And I would stay in-house.
That's sort of the route I think they'll go to. And I don't know who it would be, because I think that might still be up in the air with a number of guys scratching and clawing for the opportunity to rise up to the top. You know, obviously Brian Gutekunst and Elliot Wolf are directly from the personnel side of things, and Russ Ball would be more from the financial managerial side of things if they decide to go that way. Alonzo Highsmith, I forgot to mention as well, would be on the personnel side of things. So that's another sort of discussion for Murphy and Thompson about which way they want to go with the guy at the top, because most teams tend to have personnel guys, but not all. There are financial guys that are GMs around the league.
You could technically make Russ Ball vice president of football operations, and then make Gutekunst or Wolf or Highsmith the general manager.
Right.
But, you know, that's a little dicey too. You know, who's got the right to fire the coach?
Exactly.
Who's got the final decision on free agents, on how much you can spend on free agents? So I'm not sure that kind of democracy works all that well. I think you want to have one guy. You know, the one other wrench in this whole thing is somehow if John Schneider decided or was able to come back, would they entertain that? I would think they would have to if there was some interest there. But, you know, he's got a contract in Seattle, and I don't know. Supposedly doesn't have an out clause anymore. I'm not really sure what the status is there, but that would be something they'd have to think about.
So that's sort of the off-season preview, and I'm sure we'll talk about some of these topics in the next couple of weeks and months. But let's shift back really quickly to the Detroit game this weekend, Sunday, at Ford Field, because while there's nothing to play for in terms of the playoffs for either team, there is going to be some shuffling among teams in terms of draft position. So how does this sort of shape up for the Packers, who at right now would be 7-8, and obviously they'll either finish 8-8 or 7-9, barring a tie?
So the highest or lowest they can draft is 20, I believe. Let's see. Yeah, 20, because there's 12 playoff teams. So right now they are tied for 13th, I think it is, at 7-9. Let me count this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Yeah, they're tied for 13th with Washington and Arizona. There's three teams who are 6-9 that could finish 7-9, and then all of a sudden they're in a tiebreaker with the Packers, and they could wind up, you know, picking, I don't know, probably in the top 12, maybe. Something like that. So losing this game wouldn't be such a bad thing for them. They could use a pick in the first 15. They're going to be somewhere around there. The higher, the better. I was looking at the picks right around 13, 14, 15, 16 from this past draft, and there were some really quality players. I need to call that up because some of them, I think was Marshawn Lattimore, Malik Hooker, I think, was in there. Now, it was a really good draft last year. We all know that. The numbers were really good. Let's see who that was. Just give me one second here.
2016 is not as good.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there's some things where you just – okay, so 11, Marshawn Lattimore, great pick. 12, Deshaun Watson, great pick. 13, Hassan Reddick, really good pick. 14, Derek Barnett for the Eagles, good pick. 15, Malik Hooker, really good pick. Ravens, Marlon Humphrey at 16. Washington, Jonathan Allen at 17. Titans, Adoree Jackson at 18. So Those are really quality picks, and the Packers need one of those. So, you know, you probably want to cheer for them to lose if you care about their draft position.
And then just to show the volatility of how things can change year to year, that same range in 2016 is significantly worse. Mm-hmm. Starting at 11, you know, Vernon Hargreaves for Tampa has not really panned out that well. Sheldon Rankins for the New Orleans Saints is in their rotation, but certainly not a star. Laramie Tunsil, I believe, is playing tackle for the Dolphins,
good.
So that's an okay pick.
Okay.
Carl Joseph, a safety for the Raiders, not a significant contributor. Mm-hmm. Corey Coleman, wide receiver for the Browns, been injured a lot, not that effective. Taylor Decker, starting tackle for the Lions, mm-hmm. that's an okay pick. Keanu Neal, safety for the Falcons, the Packers know all about him. And then 18 and 19, Ryan Kelly, center for the Indianapolis Colts, and Shaq Lawson, a pass rusher for the Bills. So as you can see, significantly more talent in the 2017 draft that Tom read off than the 2016 draft that I read. I actually don't know much about this year's class yet. Is it supposed to be pretty top-heavy?
It's not supposed to be as deep, but I haven't done a lot. I've just read a few things. I haven't talked to scouts about it. So that's something we'll be doing in the coming weeks for sure. Once we know their draft status, we'll start to find out. We'll find out what juniors are coming out, and we'll have a better idea on that. But that's just something to look at. Right now, as I said, the Packers are tied for 13th with Washington and Arizona. So I'll try to have an update on that after the game.
And last we heard, Matthew Stafford is going to start and play the whole game. If that's the case, I'm picking the Lions to win. And I wanted to pick a shutout really badly last week against the Vikings, but I didn't want to be rude, so I didn't. I'm tempted to pick a shutout this week, but I'm going to say if Stafford plays the whole game, I'm going to say 24-6.
Wow. I think Hundley will play better on the road, indoors, with the controlled climate and everything. I think he'll probably do quite a bit of running around. Detroit's offensive line is really beat up. I see it as a much closer game, and I do think Detroit's going to pull it off, but I think the Packers will be competitive, you know, maybe like a I think it'll be like a 31-27 game, something like that, and lots of scoring, hopefully, just to keep it interesting.
So there you have it. That is the Week 17 prediction, and because it's Week 17, that means there's one last chance for the live blog. This is it, Tom.
Yeah,
the last time until the draft, right?
Until the draft, yeah. Yep, I won't be doing a Super Bowl blog, so this is it. Make sure you make it. There'll be all kinds of door prizes and, you know, gifts and surprises and all that kind of stuff, so not really, but show up anyways.
And until the live blog kicks off on Sunday, be sure to check out all of our coverage on jsonline.com and packersnews.com. Thank you guys very much for listening to this episode of the Packers Podcast. Hope you have a very nice weekend and a happy new year, and we will talk to you guys soon.
And I'll tell you.